Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is a podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTR-FM 92.1 Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Boland. And on the Movie Squad podcast, this is quite an episode because we get stuck into our favourite films of this year, 2024, the second half of the episode, broadcast on air, and we get to hear listeners' picks as well. But it's kind of like a mid-year checkpoint. What do we think are the best films of this year? But, you know, we talk a lot about a lot of other movies as well, Simon.
We do. We talk about a lot of movies this week, but what a treat for the listener.
Yes.
Hopefully we don't do it so rapid fire that their heads melt, but it would be fitting because we are talking about the Revelation International Film Festival program, one of our favourite festivals here in Perth, Borloo, WA, and we do rattle off our picks to click, Tristan, a screening that we're hosting on Sunday, 7th of July, which is very exciting. But yeah, a great collection of very diverse and divisive movies, as well as some crowd-pleasing favourites. So I say we get stuck in and listen to us rattle off some of our selections from the Rev Film Fest.
I feel like something bad is going to happen to me. It hasn't reached me yet, but it's on its way.
Family and friends,
the normally
of Alice
tranquil
Palmer
setting of Ararat
to
Normal
pay their
Dam
final respects to a young woman taken too soon.
10 days after Ellie's funeral, stuff started happening around the house. Sounds seemed to come from Ellie's old room.
They didn't really relent, so I thought, well, I'll just set up a camera to, you know, see anything. I looked back and there was footage of a figure moving across the hallway.
The image was quite unsettling because it certainly looked like Alice.
I want you to close your eyes.
I usually videotape my sessions. Something was happening inside that house and I wanted to find out what it was.
We checked the tapes.
There was a ghost in our house.
Every Friday here on Brekkie, we take some time for the Cinematic Arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes. We're reuniting after a couple of weeks away. Simon Morato and Tristan Fidler, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. I thought about doing it individually this morning just to like throw a spanner in the works, but I can't help the synchronized speaking back to me.
And neither can we every week, Tristan and I. We never discuss that and we
it.
Just go, yeah, but we had to bring it back.
No, it's so glad to be back together and I'm so glad that this week it's kind of like a check-in. We're hanging out and we're talking about our faves. In a little while, we'll talk about our favourite movies we've been seeing this year, our favourite 2024 flicks. So if you're heading along and you're out there in the world and you've got some faves you want to share with us, absolutely get in touch. 0405 921 91 is where you can do that. But this morning we're starting off with some favourite picks from the Revelation Film Festival. What are we talking about? Are we getting across the programme in a way that's like your faves? Are we going through it in an orderly manner? I want to know what the organisational situation is.
Sure.
Here.
Well, I mean, Revelation Film Festival, one of our favourite times of year, and it's running from in next month, from the 5th of July to the 14th of July.
3rd of July.
Oh, sorry, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, kicks off on the Wednesday.
Wonderful. And it's, it's a great chance to see some more alternative, stranger film fare. It's, I think, our favourite time of year for any film lover here in Borloo, Perth. And it's something that I'm always happy to check out. And so, yeah, I guess me and Simon, we've seen a few of the films in advance.
Oh.
I'm going to shout out some of our picks, our pick to click editions.
Pick to click.
Yeah, you know, too bad we couldn't organize like stickers to be you know, slapped onto the posters.
Movie
you know.
Squad approved or yes. whatever. Yeah.
But well, I mean, speaking of Movie Squad approved, Simon, we've got something in the works here.
Absolutely. We are co-presenting a screening, RTRFM and Movie Squad co-presenting a screening next Sunday, the 7th of July. Lake Mungo. Now, Pam, are you aware of Lake Mungo?
No.
No, okay. This is a fantastic Australian film from 2009. It's, I think, one of the best ever Australian films, one of my personal favourites. Tristan, I know you came to it more recently, but are a fan of it. And we're really excited. We're going to be presenting this sort of throwback screening on the Sunday. And it's going to be followed with a Q&A with one of the actors from the film and the cinematographer. But what's really special about this movie, for those who aren't aware of it, is that it's a horror film, but it's a, you know, horror is probably too strong a word. It's more of a sort of sinister found footage mockumentary that kind of takes the form of almost like an episode of Australian Story. Mm. And it's about this young girl who goes missing, disappears, drowns in the titular Lake Mungo.
Oh, no.
And the movie centres on interviewing the family about, you know, what has happened since her passing and how they may suspect that she's now haunting the family.
Oh, goodness
But
me.
That is truly only the first act of the film. There are a number of thrills and spills, or let's say turns that the movie takes. But what it's closer in tone to, I think, is like Picnic at Hanging Rock and even Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. And it's a very sad, devastating but very spooky movie that I absolutely adore. Tristan, are you excited to be hosting this?
Yes, this is a film that I'd heard about. I think I missed when it came out, and it's probably it wasn't like a huge hit upon release or anything like that. But its reputation has grown, I think, over the years, and anyone who's seen it has always kind of talked about it. And so I was very you know, with praise, ecstatic praise. So I was glad to see it finally this year, and it's going to be a great chance to see something like this on the big screen with a Q&A afterwards, introduced by myself and Simon. So that's one definitely we're highlighting as a pick to click, you know, must see edition of the Revelation Film Festival.
Oh, it is must see. And just a heads up, if you go to the RTRFM Instagram page, you might be able to win some free tickets to it. So just putting that out there. But nonetheless, that's our first pick to click. Tristan, what else is on your list?
Well, it's a nice tie because we're talking about a sort of a contemporary Australian film that relates to older Australian films. And Revelation has a few windows with films that are coming out later in wider release, including the Yorgos Lanthimos new film, Kinds of Kindness. But one that I was excited about and heard a lot about is a film called Bird Eater. Has this crossed your path at all, Pam?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I have no idea.
There's a nice little cue in the first kind of like montage sequence where one of the characters has on their living room wall a poster of Wake and Fright. And this is definitely like a new version of Wake and Fright.
Near remake.
You know, looking at how toxic masculinity is in the here and now, and it's all about a Bucks night, a weekend away in the country, where the groom decides to invite the bride. And so it's a really strange, confronting film. It's very unsettling. There were some things about it that didn't quite work for me, but I was glad to have seen it. It's very compelling, very visually engaging, and with great performances. So Bird Eater is part of the Revelation Film Festival. And you saw this as well, Simon.
I loved it. This is a five-star film for me. It's one of my favorite films of the year. It's not going to be in the second half of this segment because it's technically a Q3 release. Right?
Yes.
But I adored Bird Eater, and I strongly recommend seeing it in the cinema.
Okay.
Now, Pam, during the Friday Mix this morning, I heard a phrase, and I echoed that phrase, who will match my freak? But the Revelation Film Festival. Because there are a bunch of great transgressive shorts and features that are playing. I want to shout out a couple. One from local director and multidisciplinary artist Aaron Coates as part of the Twisted Realities and Surreal Dreams showcase. I also watched a short called Worm Pornography.
I saw that in the lineup here on my little list here.
And you know what? I'm not going to talk about it, but it was good and it was interesting and it was extremely experimental and transgressive. What I do want to mention is The Visitor, which is a new feature from iconoclastic, transgressive, queer filmmaker, Bruce LaBruce.
Okay.
Now, Bruce LaBruce has made a number of films over the past 30 years. Several of them have been banned in Australia, most notably L.A. Zombie about 15 years ago. The Visitor shows that he has not lessened his trailblazing and transgressive instincts. And basically what he does and has done throughout the years is fuse narrative filmmaking with the actual art and form of pornography.
Okay.
And the question is that actually art? And that's sort of the question that all his films raise. The long story short, with The Visitor, it is a remake of Pier Paolo Pasolini's Teorema. It's transplanted to the UK, and it basically begins with a sort of imposing black man washed up onto the shore of the UK. He's played by performance artist Bishop Black. He's inside a suitcase, and then he's taken in by a bourgeois family whom he proceeds to dominate and colonize sexually. And the film has unsimulated sex scenes, and what's really interesting about it is that the sex scenes were filmed with audiences invited to view through peepholes at an art gallery so as to avoid the actual criminality of that act.
Whoa.
Now, I have interviewed Bruce LaBruce. It's going to air on Artbeat later this morning at 10:30 a.m. I'll also attach it to the Movie Squad podcast. That'll be online from 9. But again, for those who like to, you know, push the boat out quite a bit, The Visitor is absolutely a very interesting film that pushes all the right buttons.
I really am interested in the idea of it. I love those questions that you can pose when you're trying to blur those lines. It's really interesting to see, especially people that you go to the movie with or you attend with, and then those conversations afterwards are always my absolute bread and butter. I love arguing about different takes on a movie, which is why Movie Squad is so brilliant. And it'll be great to hear from Bruce LaBruce all about this film. So we'll definitely be tuning into that interview. What else is on the hit list for this really wonderful Revelation Film Festival situation?
Well, you know, there's a lot to cover, and it's definitely for people to go to the website to dig in further, because sometimes you can miss a few things that are there in the program. And but you know, sometimes you want to see things that provoke and you have those kind of like difficult conversations with afterwards about what everyone thought, or you want something that's a bit more really silly, and that's a film called Hundreds of Beavers. So this is a film that I'd heard about, and it's a black and white comedy. It's set in a kind of ye old times where it's all about this guy who's like learning the ways of being a trapper of catching beavers to sell their fur, but it's both shot on location but also shot on green screen. So it has a vibe that reminds me of Adult Swim cartoons, of SpongeBob SquarePants, of Looney Tunes cartoons, of silent comedy, because the beavers here are basically played by adults wearing mascot costumes. So you'll just see them running around chasing after this guy who is... the lead performer is very good. Rylan Brixen Cole Tews is his name. He's quite ripped. He's very handsome.
He's quite ripped.
He shows off his body.
He's quite ripped.
But he's got that Bruce Campbell Evil Dead energy where he is just unafraid to be a clown and very silly. So this, you know, it takes a while to get on the wavelength and go, what am I going to be watching here? What is this? But as the gags continue to flow, I was having a whale of a time just laughing. And I think this will be a great one to see in a cinema with a big crowd just reacting to the silliness. So Hundreds of Beavers. I know you haven't seen it, Simon. But have you heard about this one?
I have heard about it, and it's sort of been a grassroots hit in America. Hit is a strong word, but you know, in the cult scene. So I'm actually very excited to see it because I've only heard good things. We should shout out some more Australian films. We haven't seen these, but I did want to flag that Kid Snow, which is a WA-made boxing film. That's the opening night picture. Also, In the Trenches, which is the making of the WA World War One film Before Dawn. That's screening also on the opening night. And I guess interesting to see how they made WA look like, you know, World War One era France. And then there's Westralia Day, which is on the Saturday, 6th of July. It's a showcase of WA-made shorts. Always a great way to see burgeoning up-and-coming filmmakers. And I was really happy to see a short made by Zach James, who we know from Mongia and is a filmmaker and playwright in his own regard. Malu Man is sort of almost a prequel or a first act to a Aboriginal superhero story or vigilante story, and a really interesting and serious film with a biting sense of humour. So very funny, and I don't even want to talk more about it because I don't want to give away the twists and turns in this, you know, 15-minute film. But obviously recommend checking out those kinds of... those short compilations are always great, you know, because they're really... you know, you're seeing a wide range of kinds of filmmaking, and every 15 minutes there's a new taste to enjoy.
Oh, it's so exciting.
And definitely want to shout out, there's the City of Vincent Project, which has three short documentaries related to the City of Vincent, but there's one including about Lunar Cinemas called Lunar Starring. So that's going to be fun to see. Shout out to Ailish and Caitlin who've been working hard on that. But a documentary all about Lunar Cinemas. I can't wait. But, you know, Pam, we've been talking a lot. This is a list-heavy episode. Do you get to go to the Revelation Film Festival? Have you checked it out in the past?
I actually haven't checked it out in the past. It's always been something that I have been meaning to check out, but working in hospitality, it wasn't conducive to always getting to the screenings at the time. But I think that's just a really bad excuse for me being disorganized and then being excited when it's over. It used to happen with the Lottery West films that went at Perth Festival as well. So it was always really trying to like try and get to all of them, and I'd be quite sad. But this year I'm making it a priority to have a bit of a hit list and get, I really want to see Hundreds of Beavers. I would really like to see Kid Snow. And I'm definitely keen on Malu Man. I've definitely spoken to Zach from Munkia all about that film in the past, even as a part of interviews here. He was really excited about the making of it and sort of couldn't contain the excitement. So we've spoken about it lots of times. I think it'll be a brilliant thing to catch, especially in celebration of some great West Australian work. So it sounds pretty exciting. Sounds pretty brilliant.
There's so much to cover and we haven't even done justice to it. But, like, you know, there are other opportunities to see some old films, such as Black Mirror Film Collective are presenting a screening of Kids, which we talked about earlier in the year with the documentary that you reviewed. Or was it last year? I can't remember.
Last year, We Are Still Kids, yes. Or We Were Kids. Regardless, go see Kids.
Yeah. Or The Parallax View, the film from the 70s starring Warren Beatty, presented by From Book to Film. And then, you know, obviously RTR... very much into music, and there's lots of music documentaries as well, including one about Mogwai, If the Stars Had Sound. There's a documentary about Red Cross, the band, Born Innocent, and also a documentary about the creative force behind the band Lubricated Goat, I Should Have Been Dead Years Ago. What a great title for a film. So there's so much to see and do, so definitely check out the Revelation Film Festival website. It's got the program on there. And I think the fun thing for me, Simon, about Revelation is, like, you can go in a roll. You can get, like, a multi-pass. You see one film on, like, a Saturday afternoon, and you think, well, I'm here now. Why not check something else out and just kind of keep the film festival vibe rolling? I think that's always the best part of the experience.
Yeah, and that's the festival where I discovered film. Like, that's where I saw Dogtooth, you know, the Yorgos Lanthimos' sort of breakout film, and so many other great experiences. To go see these movies that are, you know, again, they are a bit more hardcore than your regular fare. To see it in a, you know, with an audience is a rarity. So hopefully that's a good, you know, starter for you. For those who are like, well, where do I begin? You can go see, you know, Lake Mungo, obviously, and The Visitor and what have you, and Bird Eater. But otherwise, go check out the program at the Revelation Film Festival website.
Oh, it's going to be a really exciting couple of weeks to talk about what's going on. And if you do get down to Revelation Film Festival and you catch something wonderful, of course, let us know if you're loving things down there. We really want to hear about all the things that you've been loving. We're going to be talking about all sorts of favourites next, getting across our favourites from the year. We've had a couple of people get in touch, and I'll shout them out in a bit. But if you want to get in touch and share your favourites from the movies you've watched this year, 0405 91 91 is where you can do that. But we'll be back in a sec with all those faves.
You think that tennis is about expressing yourself, doing your thing? You don't know what tennis is.
What is it?
Tashi Duncan.
She's in another league.
You were incredible today.
Come on!
To have a fashion line, foundation.
She's gonna turn a whole family into millionaires.
Ombreki, it's Sorry with Favourite. We're talking all things favourites across RTRFM, across Movie Squad this morning. We're getting into some of the listeners' favourites, we're getting into some of mine, and of course the Blockbuster Babes favourites from 2024 so far. A little bit of a check-in. Now, we've got some texts in, some folks getting in touch to tell us what they loved. We had Chow getting in touch to say that they loved Fremont. Really, really gorgeous. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, that's good, isn't it? We love Fremont and really, really loving that movie. We had some folks getting in touch to say that they loved Anatomy of a Fall, even though it's from 2023. Mm. They saw it this year.
Yeah, sure.
And that was definitely one enjoyed by the cast of Movie Squad. There's a few people getting in touch to say that they really loved Priscilla, and there's someone saying they loved Challengers, which is a really lovely lead-in because that was one of my hot picks for 2024, I think.
Is that your favourite film of the year so far?
I don't know if I can pick a favourite, and I know that's against the whole rules of this bit.
Absolutely.
But, I don't know if I can. I think it probably would be. I think I saw it twice in cinemas. It was like...
Which is always a pretty good indication,
yeah,
right?
I was pretty obsessed with it. Like, and I've listened to the soundtrack. PTMC played like two cuts from it on and out to lunch one day, and I lost my marbles in the car. I was like, this is delightful. I think that the sort of cultural sort of obsession with it also fed my obsession with it. So people being really indulged in talking about it, playing the soundtrack, it just was everywhere. I love a sport movie that isn't really about sport, so that's great. I thought it was excellent. If you haven't seen it yet, you should go see it. I think my other highlights would be loved Dune Part 2, loved Drive Away Dolls back at the start of the year. Worst movie I've seen this year so far. Do we do that? Are we doing
that? Yeah, if you want. Yeah, why not?
I know what it is. And,
yeah, it's The Idea of You.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is the movie with Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzine, which was the Harry Styles fanfic to movie Sidge Pipeline. I just don't know. Absolutely what? Not.
So bad.
I mean, you
so
know, bad. You talk about everyone's playing the cuts from Challengers, but I think people are still loving the tracks from August Moon and playing, do you remember what the name of the band was called?
Yeah, August Moon.
August Moon.
And they had like synchronized dancing. They were like a cross between One Direction and the Backstreet Boys NSYNC. And I was like, absolutely not.
Well, we'd like to talk about cinema here at Movie Squad, and I don't think The Idea of You can classify as such. And Tristan, what we normally do at the end of the year, Pam, if you recall from last year, we do this whole, like, we've got a whole algorithm going on. We combine lists.
Yeah, it's a full science.
There's a full science, but there's no science for the mid-year check-in. We've had 6 months of movies. Okay. Tristan and I have compiled our personal, favourites of the year. So we thought we might just go back and forth, see if any align with your faves, Pam. You can give a quick, like, yeah or nah, in agreement. But Tristan, what do you reckon about that? Shall we bounce back 10 to 1?
Yeah, and definitely I feel like if we mention one that we both have on our list, we can just kind of say where it is. You mentioned Fremont, and that was in my list as well, at number 10. I really love that film. It's a really kind of, small black and white film. I'm sure a lot of people will go because Jeremy Allen White's in it, but he's only in it for like the last scenes, but very good one worth check out afterwards. Yeah,
my number 10 is a short film, actually. It's called 491 VA from director George Matthews, and it's available. You can watch it online now. It's sort of an experimental short, but a really interesting one, and it's part of a trilogy, and that kind of almost makes up feature length, I guess. But it's the premise of it is that it's based on the found footage of a filmmaker whose works were lost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary, but also a funny riff on outsider art. So 491 VA... That's my number 10, Tristan.
Mm. Well,
and you've seen that as well, by the way.
I've seen the first one of the trilogy, but yeah, George Matthews is one of my favourite people on Letterboxd to follow, so I think he's underneath William Gibson's acronym or something, some weird title like that, but worth checking out. Number 9, I just had, so some of this is quite loose, but Zone of Interest I had on there. Mm. That film, I'm sure we'll touch about it a little bit later, but had a real impact, even though I was kind of a bit, I felt like it was more like an art installation than a film. In a weird way, but anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a bit.
Yeah.
My number 9, Love Lies Bleeding. Pam, was that on your list?
Oh my God, I totally forgot that I watched that. That was definitely one of my favourites. I loved that movie. Kristen Stewart, excellent.
Absolutely. Katie O'Brien, also great.
Still have to catch up with that one. Housekeeping for Beginners, number 8, the Australian Macedonian film. I really, really love that one.
Yeah, my number eight, Challengers. Of course, I was the last of the movie squad to catch up with it, including, I think, our friendly benchmates, Cecilia Allen and Lucy Rutherford. But, yeah, obviously great fun. And answers the cinematic question, what if tennis was actually really horny?
And beautiful.
Yes, I had...
Silence.
What if, indeed?
You got to pause when something like that is said. But yeah. definitely on my list is the film Monster, which is not to be confused with the Charlize Theron film from the 2003, but a really beautiful, lovely Korean film from Harakuzu Korida, who made Shoplifters really lovely. Love that film. What's next?
Yeah, well, I still want to catch up with Monster, and I know I played Perth Fest as well, so I'm definitely behind there. My number seven is Evil Does Not Exist, the Japanese film from Ryosuke Hamaguchi, who made, of course, Drive My Car and also Happy Hour and a number of other films. Very enigmatic movie. Pam, did you end up catching that one?
No, but I really want to.
I know you do, yeah. Well, hopefully it'll be available on home release, digital, whatever the variation might be. But really glad that the score by Aiko, her last name is escaping me, that is now being parceled out and is available to listen to. Great jazzy score there.
Probably the top film of the year that says the word glamping a lot in the movie. So number six, I had Challenges. So we've already talked about that. But yeah, I really thought it was a lot of fun as well. And looking forward to seeing it again for the second time as well.
Oh, nice. Oh, absolutely. My number six, Civil War. You know, one of the divisive films of the year from director Alex Garland, set in a future version of America that is cleft in twain.
Ash getting in touch on the text line to say they also love Civil War.
Yeah.
So that's also really great to hear. We love when there's a shared love.
Good on you, Ash.
I know that this is one that both me and Simon really loved, and I don't think we were there to talk about it together, but The Beast, the film with Lea Seydoux, really loved that. I'm keen to watch it again, even though it's not a real feel-good movie. It's not the same experience as Challenges, but there's something electric about it at the same time.
Absolutely. My number five is Late Night with the Devil, the Australian horror film that is also quote-unquote found footage, which is a real real trend in Australia, but great performance from David Dashmalkian as a late-night talk show host who may or may not have engaged with Satan for ratings.
I had number four as Civil War, and the other thing I'll add to that is that, you know, sometimes it's great when you get that experience where you're reading all these other reviews and going, I don't know what's going on here. I love this film, but lots of people were like, they don't explain how there's a civil war, and it's like, who cares? What the hell? This is like, it's an experience. It's great. Anyway.
I love reading reviews and going, you idiot. My number four is The Zone of Interest. I agree entirely with Tristan. I think that's going to be one of the most memorable cinema experiences in my lifetime.
Absolutely. It was definitely a jarring thing to go watch at the cinema, and it was silence in the car afterwards on
Absolutely.
The way home. And I think that's appropriate. If you haven't seen it, definitely go watch it and try and watch it in the most cinematic environment with the loudest speakers that you can muster.
Yes.
It's important.
Number three, I had Evil Does Not Exist as well.
Nice. Three for me is The Beast. Yeah, was disappointed to not be able to talk about it on the air, but absolutely adore that film and the turns it takes.
And then number two I had was Dune Part Two. You know, and then what were you talking about like Challenges? I feel like with the Dune experience, both Dune Part One and Dune Part Two, is how it's just become like more around in culture, all the kind of the references and the kind of and the memes about it. So yeah, Dune Part Two.
I'll just say it now, Dune is Part Two is my number one film of the year. It's just, I love that first film. I've watched it so many times, and it was so great to now see Dune 2 in the cinemas. Rushed out and bought the 4K Blu-ray. I just am obsessed with. I'm just obsessed with the theater of it, you know. And I love the plotting. Really great to discover the book. So yeah, Dune Part Two. But I'll mention now my number two film of the year before we get to your number one, Tristan. The First Omen. I love this film. I am obsessed with
this
it.
One.
Oh man, it is a prequel to the original Omen. I cannot recommend it enough. Such a great discovery, such fun in the cinema, but also I think transgressive enough to tickle those other, you know, funny bones you want tickled in horror cinema.
Definitely has an image that I won't forget from cinema this year, that's for sure. And number one, I just had The Iron Claw. And it was more because, like, it really slayed me at the end. I was just like a wet sponge. by it. So, but, you know, Yeah, and Pam, you also loved Dune Part 2 as well.
I love Dune Part 2. I really want to see the Iron Claw, but I just haven't been in the right mood. Yeah, you know. Like, I just nearly watched it on the plane and thought that that was a bit dangerous.
That's my number 12, I'll just say.
Okay, great. I watched Priscilla on the plane, finally. That was really good. Yeah. That's not from this year. That's from last year. But
you were really looking forward to that. Was it a bit of a disappointment, or was it? Did it meet your expectations?
No, I thought it was great. Yeah, I think it didn't meet my expectations, but I think it handled a topic that I was worried about really well. So I think that that's a win in my book. But I love Dune Part 2. I really want to see the Iron Claw. So I think winners all around. What was my favourite again? What did I say? Oh, Challenges. Yeah. I feel like maybe it's
until
a tie.
Until you see the first Omen.
I feel like it's a... No, absolutely not. I feel like it's a tie with Love Lies Bleeding. That's what I think Challenges or Love Lies Bleeding. But maybe Love Lies Bleeding loses because I have to close my eyes when the gross bit happens.
Yeah, sure. You know? Gross bits.
Bits, gross bits. Maybe Challenges wins. Anyway.
We'll reconvene at the end of the year to see where the lists shift. Yep. But a good touch point for a fun year in cinema so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, we've got a final one getting in touch. Ange, a turbo listener of Movie Club.
Movie Club.
Movie Club, that's what she said. Turbo Movie Club listener here. Yeah. Thanks, Ange. Getting in touch to say Love Lies Bleeding is one of their faves for the year for sure.
Love it, Ange.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Movie Squad. If you want to check in with the podcast, you can wherever you do so, and it'll all be great. You'll have a great time over there. There's lots of stuff to find. Simon and Tristan for another great week of Movie Squad. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, that was a lot of fun, like checking in on our favourite films of the year, and there's still some that I have to catch up with, including Love Lies Bleeding. That's definitely high on my list of films to see. And I know that as we get to the end of the year and our kind of top 10 episodes, Simon, there is a kind of, you know, a dash sometimes to catch up with everything that's out there. But it was great kind of just like, seeing, where we kind of... connect, and definitely, you know, there were ones that you had on your top 10 list that should be maybe higher on my list. Like, I really loved the First Omen as well. That was quite a nice surprise for a film that is a prequel to a horror franchise that I don't think anyone had any big expectations about, and particularly coming out after Immaculate, which is kind of parallel in that they're both films about American nuns in Italy dealing with kind of like demonic possession. I think both use a music cue from some giallo film from the 70s, you know, to get the vibe across. So I know you haven't seen Immaculate yet.
No,
but
I do want to.
Yeah.
Even though it does feel a little like the home brand version of The First Omen, and I don't mean that with disrespect,
yes.
But after The First Omen, which just was... And look... We even said this on our review. Mm. Like, let's not overcook it. Like, I don't want people to go into it thinking like, well, it's akin to The Zone of Interest or, these more sort of highfalutin art films. It is still very much a meat and potatoes horror flick, but that can still be great cinema in the sense of how is it delivering on those terms, you know, and how is it paying homage to The Omen, which... As I've said on the air before, I've revisited and is a bad film. I think The First Omen is significantly better than The Omen.
Yeah.
But then also Possession, which it pays tribute to, and other films about nuns.
Yeah.
Not Limits 2, but Nuns on the Run and Sister Act as well, of course.
Of course, of course. And, I think as well, so yeah, it's about taking the film on its terms or the genre's terms. Like, I was looking at the larger list of films that I had and the ones like in the 10 to 20, and there are some there that you might not objectively say, oh, that's a 5-star film. And they might not even be 3-star films. They might not even be good films, but like on the level of a trashy action flick. Yeah, I had The Beekeeper in there because that was so ridiculous and silly and that I enjoyed it as one of the first films I saw this year. But also Bad Boys Ride or Die, I was just surprised about how much I enjoyed it, particularly, the fourth entry in a franchise where the two stars are kind of getting on in years. But, I had a lot of fun. And I know that one film that we didn't touch upon in the combined top 10, but that we saw together and quite liked a lot was A Monkey Man, the Dev Patel directed and starring action film as well.
That's right. I enjoyed seeing that in the same cinema with you. We weren't sitting together for some reason, but I remember hearing your laugh throughout, and I'm sure you heard mine.
because it was just a fun John Wick inspired, yeah. You know, and sort of not as high rent as John Wick, at the scale of where that saga is. But you know, it was also an action film that had a little bit on its mind, but it also had this kind of, you know, new sensation to it or new flavor to it, you know, based on Dev Patel and what he brought to it. But just a lot of good bone crunching fun.
Yeah.
Still haven't seen Bad Boys and really want to. Haven't seen a lot of the dumb action films, and that has been a failure on my behalf, not including Johnny Mnemonic, which you memorably screened as part of Trash Classics here in Perth. I do want to shout out a couple of the, I guess, smaller films, you know, maybe the more art house films that we have covered on the air, but if people haven't had a chance, they were in my sort of, you know, 10 to 20 list as well. Club Zero, which we were divided on, but the Jessica Hausner film I found quite, you know, interesting, and I sort of quipped that it sort of plays with live ammo, and I respected it for that. Also, Four Daughters, which is a really interesting documentary. Highly recommend that. And also The Sweet East, another film that we were divided on, but similarly is pushing buttons in a way that I find interesting.
Yeah, I haven't seen Four Daughters, but I think this has been added to Stan for streaming. And I guess, you know, the good, bad thing about the shorter window now between a film getting a release and it becoming, you know, available to stream, whether it to be by digital or just available on a streaming service, is that, you know, the gap is closed, that, you know, you can check out The First Omen on Disney Plus. You can see these films that we've just talked about or reviewed 2 months prior. So you definitely want to catch up with Four Daughters. And it's funny that I'm looking at my the list of the films that like all the kind of like artsy independent dramas were probably in the top 10, and the ones that are left over are more kind of like, you know, I reviewed this on the air, but I really like the French animation Mars Express. That was definitely something I really enjoyed as a kind of cyberpunk animated film. I did like the Wim Wenders film Perfect Days.
Still want to see that. Haven't caught up with it yet.
And that's kind of available now, I think, to view. That was part of Perth Festival. There were some things that kind of held me back from fully loving it, but the lead performance by the main actor is wonderful. And, you know, sometimes you go to films because you want to be challenged and provoked, and this is definitely a film where you just feel like you're soaking into a warm bath, or you're curling up with your favorite book by a lamplight. There's something very comforting about it as well. I had Immaculate on there. Furiosa, I know that maybe we're a little bit
cool on it. But
yeah, but I really liked
it. Yeah, it's in my top 20 as well.
Yeah.
But it was very... It was good.
And the only other film, I also like Drive Away Dolls as well, but more as a kind of like, you know, sometimes you go to films because you want the epic feeling, and sometimes it's nice to watch a film that's a bit throwaway, that is a kind of like a bit of a dash. The only other film that I saw that I'll explain, because I took a gamble on seeing it, was a film called Twilight of the Warriors Walled In, a Hong Kong action film that I just took a punt on because, you know, it's great to see. I think in some of the larger cinemas, they do sort of show a lot of Asian cinema, and this was part of that kind of like initiative that they have. It was a film that I only saw because a director was involved, Soi Chang, who I've seen a couple of his films, including Motorway, which I really liked. A film about the Kowloon city, the kind of like this set in the 80s, about this kind of like lower part of the city, this walled city where like people just kind of live in their own kind of ecosystem, and about four kind of heroes who come together to defend it from an arch villain. Really over the top, a lot of fun. This is kind of one of those action films where people somehow have superpowers. Like, it's not in the world of superheroes, but suddenly, like, they're able to, you know, be thrown around and survive that kind of punch, or then punch someone through a wall. But it's probably the least known film on my list, but yeah, definitely worth checking out if you ever get the chance to. Twilight of the Warriors Walled In.
I think that's always really interesting, and also a good reminder of how, I guess, myopic we can be sometimes.
Yeah.
like the idea that Hollywood and the Hollywood blockbuster is the be-all and end-all of, you know, monolithic culture. You know, I always remember the anecdote that Star Wars has no purchase really in Asia, you know, like prior to the new trilogy. So it doesn't have the nostalgia and legacy. They have their own, you know, franchises and massive blockbusters. So always interesting to sort of peek in to see what, you know, Bollywood or Asian cinema and Chinese cinema is doing as well. Last one I want to flag from my top 20 is a film you put me on to. It's another short film. Came out the last week of 2023, but it's The Mask by Conor O'Malley. I know I'm blurring the lines as to what constitutes a film with this and 491 VA, but a really interesting, very funny short film about how someone gets brain worms.
Well, that's funny because Conor O'Malley, if you're not familiar with, is a great comedian, a great filmmaker, has always put out these shorts that have very intense energy. And he's been in a lot of films as well. You'll see him across different things as well. But that's funny that you mentioned that because on my list was the stand-up film that he released recently. But I thought, this is a stand-up film that was like released on YouTube. I won't include it. But there's a film that's available through his YouTube channel. Basically a stand-up performance, a character-based stand-up performance called Stand Up Solutions. And when me and my partner Sally, we were traveling through New York last year, this is what we got to see performed live in Brooklyn. And so this show is available to see on YouTube for free. It's really great. It's a bit full on, but I think some people will really, if you're on the wavelength, he definitely captures something that's, I think, in our culture here and now, which is a kind of weird, toxic masculinity energy that's kind of like looking at AI as the solution to their life problems.
I will absolutely be watching that. Before we sign off, Tristan, there are actually more text messages coming through from us being on the air. I do want to shout out someone who said, "Sorry, squad. I'm pro watching devastating movies and having a sob on a plane, and I literally have a letterbox list on the topic." No need to apologize. I think we're all on board with that. That's fine. Tracy from Kalamunda texted to say the favorite film of hers this year was The Rooster, which I think is the Hugo Weaving film, which I didn't catch up with.
No.
But great to get that recommendation for an Aussie film. What else? Poor Things. Someone's texted in to say, "Poor Things sticks with me. Such great concepts like a dog with duck legs." Technically a 2023 film, but it's on that fringe. We'll let it slide because we let a few slide this morning. And then I also want to shout out Connor from Morley. Their favorite film they've seen this year, Zone of Interest. Worst movie they've streamed this year is Flintstones and Viva Rock Vegas.
Well, you know, I haven't seen that one, but that's in the great tradition of sequels where they change the cast, and it just feels like a kind of a downgrade. Not to besmirch
Mark Addy, who played. It's Mark Addy.
Yeah.
I think Stephen Baldwin plays Barney.
Yeah.
I think Jane Krakowski plays Betty.
Yeah.
And then Kristen Johnson from Third Rock from the Sun plays Wilma.
Yes.
Is that 4 for 4?
Yeah.
I gotta look this up.
And I think it's. Because in the original Flintstones movie, if you weren't aware, Steven Spielberg produced a movie of the Flintstones, of live-action film from 1995 or something like that. I can't remember. But I remember seeing it in the cinema. It is very strange. But that one had John Goodman, Rick Moranis.
Rosie O'Donnell,
is Elizabeth Perkins. Elizabeth Taylor played his mother-in-law, and I think she's played by Joan Collins in the sequel.
Wow. So Pearl Slaghoop is played by Joan Collins.
And this is a fun tie-in as well. Also in the movie is Kyle MacLachlan. And if you don't know...
In the first one.
Yeah, in the first one. If you don't know, he has a Letterboxd account where he has lists of films that are collected under characters he's played. And the character he plays in... The Flintstones has a Letterboxd list as well.
That's amazing. His assistant in that film is played by Halle Berry. A bit of a downgrade in the Viva Rock Vegas. We've got Thomas Gibson as the villain, Chip Rockefeller.
And I think that's also... See, maybe I have to watch it now, even though I know it's going to be terrible. But that they also introduce... Is it Marvin the Martian or like...
Great Gazoo.
The Great Gazoo, sorry. Alan Cumming, is that
right? Yeah. And Taylor Negron plays Gazam and Gazing, apparently, aliens from Gazoo's race. Cinema in 2024 is reflecting on the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas, and we thank Connor for the recommendation. How much? Okay, here's final question. How much money do you think the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas made at the box office?
I have to say that it probably wasn't a success, otherwise we'd see another, Flintstones 3.
Worldwide.
Worldwide. 5 million? Is that...
59 million.
Well...
Off an $85 million budget.
Oh, well, still a flop, but, it's just funny to think that's it still earned that amount of money. And it's just crazy to think that I know that much about the film that I've not seen.
Me as well. And that's the true indictment.
Yeah. Well, there you go. What a great note to end on. Cinema lives. Viva Las Vegas. Viva La Cinema. Thank you all
We mentioned so many films in this week's episode that we had to get to Viva Las Vegas. Yes. We ran out of other movies to talk about.
Yes. So thank you all for texting in your favourites and your least favourites. And we'll catch you on the next episode of Movie Squad. Give it to me. Give it to me.
Congratulations on getting another film into Australia with The Visitor. Ever since LA Zombie was banned here in 2010, are you always waiting for the hammer to drop and discover that your next film has been banned again?
Well, you know, you don't get lucky too often. you don't hit the jackpot that often. although this one, you know, could give LA Zombie a run for its money. It's pretty out there. When that happened, it was it really was kind of a windfall for the film because it got way more notice than it would have before, and I was getting lots of people like yourself calling from Australia and doing lots of interviews, and then after that it was accepted at the it played in competition at the Locarno Film Festival, probably partly because it got that, you know, kind of notoriety. So thank you, Australia.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. And it wasn't the first film of yours to have trouble in Australia specifically, with Hustle of White had some issues too. In that moment, whether it lingers, who's to say, but what was your perception of Australia or Australian censors at that time?
Gee, you know, I actually don't... I can understand why my films upset people sometimes. It's not like you'd have to be an idiot not to... understand that when you're pushing buttons and kind of breaking taboos and representing things that are borderline obscene in the eyes of the law, you're going to have that kind of reaction. But on the other hand, you just have to look at like mainstream media and mainstream cinema in terms of, I always think about like extreme horror movies or violence, you know, like that present the most sadistic and bloody and violent sexually violent movies, but they're not explicit. Exactly, it's sexually explicit, and they're made as mainstream entertainment, so they're perfectly acceptable. So I think there's always a bit of hypocrisy there, like a basic kind of prudery about culture in terms of sexual representation, and then queer representation as well plays into that. There's usually an element of homophobia as well. It just adds to the you know, for me, the forbidden fruit. It makes your work the forbidden fruit, so people want to see it even more.
Absolutely. So let's talk about The Visitor. How did you get involved with Apolitical?
Yeah, that was a great kind of just serendipitous thing that happened. So I was just I worked with these people that do a magazine called Doesn't Exist, and we were looking for a place to launch the magazine in London. They're a magazine that devotes an entire issue to one artist. And they'd done one with John Waters and Peter Greenaway. So they did an issue with me, and we just were looking for a place to show it. And they met Apolitical, and Apolitical became very interested in doing the book launch. But then also they knew my work, and they were anxious to work with me. And so I proposed to actually make a movie for them that was sort of based on the photo spread that I did for the magazine, which was to make an imaginary movie that doesn't exist and make it look like it's real, like with photo production stuff. So, and my idea was to make a kind of sci-fi porn version of Pasolini's Teorema. And I'd been meaning to kind of do a remake of the film for a number of years, a long time. So, I even talked to Marina Abramovich about it one time. So they were just on board, and the project kind of snowballed. They got more and more ambitious, and I shot a lot of it at their space in West London. After a week of shooting, and I shot all the sex in the basement of their space, which is in a former bacon factory. I didn't feel like I had enough material. I didn't have an ending. And they have like a sister kind of arts organization in the south of France. The artist Andre Malotkin has a compound down there called the Foundry, which is in the Pyrenees Mountains, which is very gorgeous. And so we went down there last August and shot a bunch of additional material. And so it was a very open and creative process, and they were just very supportive of allowing me to do whatever I wanted. They generally work with outsider artists whose work is too extreme or politically incorrect or complicated or expensive to be made through normal kind of art channels.
No, that's fantastic. And I can see the, you tick a lot of those boxes, which is a good, which is a good thing. I want to talk about the process of filming those sex scenes in particular, because obviously there's some interesting elements there. But I did want to ask you, you know, when you say you wanted to remake Tiarama and the sex scenes, you know, they take place in this sort of liminal space, and it's very beautifully lit, but obviously explicit. And when you say you wanted to remake it and I guess bring that, you know, what was missing in theory from Tiarama, how would you articulate what the sex now brings to the story?
Yeah, I mean, Pasolini is, you know, the master, and the original movie is, I think, a masterpiece. And but it's, you know, Pasolini at the end of his career, he made this three movies that are kind of about the psychosexual pathology of the bourgeoisie. You know, Porcile, Tiarama, and Salo. And so I took elements from all three, but it's mostly pretty faithful, in a way, remake of Tiarama. And it's a very allegorical story. There's not a lot of dialogue in the original, and it does hit that sweet spot that I've been working, that my work has been about for the last about 10 or 12 years, which is the intersection of religious and sexual ecstasy. His last trilogy of movies also was kind of moving closer and closer to the pornographic, like especially Salo is extremely graphic. Mm-hmm. and it's all about fetish, and it's you know, about fascism and fetish and the kind of master-slave relationship and the kind of power relations in sex. So I feel like I just took the original and took it to its logical extreme, where I think if Pasolini had continued to make films, if he hadn't been assassinated, he would maybe have made porn himself.
Going back to what you mentioned about the space that you got to work in to film it, and I understand that you were able to invite the public to sort of view the filming of the sex scenes through peepholes, you know, even though that was sort of on the fringe of legality. Now, how do you recruit people for that, knowing that it is obviously pushing the line?
Yeah, that was part of that, you know, creativity of Apolitical, where they really allowed me to do crazy things, and it was really part of the process was to open it up to the public. So one night we had invited the public. We kind of advertised it as a show, like as an art show, and people showed up, and we had this wall with kind of peepholes or glory holes in it that people could look through, and then we had a live feed from the camera to monitors that were upstairs. We were shooting in the basement, and so people could watch us shoot live on the monitors. So it was, in terms of the legality, I mean, you know, it's like there's a lot of stuff that's illegal in England, according to the laws that they passed about eight years ago, that apply to porn, but they don't apply to art. You know, it's very specifically. So it's a bit of a loophole there.
Yep.
It's like in Toronto when there's certain spaces that would allow, about 10 years ago, that you could do live sex acts in Toronto if you had a cabaret license, you know, but it was a bit of a, because it wasn't defined what a cabaret was exactly. So,
well, life is a cabaret, yeah, so that opens up a lot of avenues.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and porn is a cabaret, apparently. So we were a bit kind of nervous about it because it was kind of pushing the limits, but a lot of people showed up. Like I think at least 150 or 200 people came through and watched. And for me, it was a really interesting a creative experience because it made me very self-conscious of I was like performing being a director and kind of like it made me very conscious of my methods and how I behave on set and my kind of persona as a director. So it was kind of like a live performance of being a director, which is quite interesting.
That's so fascinating, that additional artifice. But yeah, I love that, the idea of playing Bruce LaBruce in public. Is that a persona you feel you have to fulfill?
Yeah, it started way back from my very first films and my fanzines when I did a fanzine called JD's, which started the queercore movement. And I had this kind of I performed sexually in my early films. In fact, my first two films, No Skin Off Masks and Super 8½, I'm showing next week in LA to launch my new photo book. It is not The Revolution is My Boyfriend. And in those two films, I developed a kind of persona and performed live sex in the films, but it almost as a kind of, protective barrier, or, you know, I create a kind of persona that was different from myself and a character named Bruce LaBruce, which is obviously a made up name and persona that allowed me to kind of perform this, to inhabit a character who was brave enough and crazy enough to do all of this stuff when very much it was a little bit like the Wizard of Oz. It's like, you know, the character behind the curtain who's doing this kind of stuff, propping up a kind of an imaginary persona to perform for him that is a spectacle for the world to see, but that the world can't really get too close to, you know, the person behind it.
Well, 30 years later, the process of making these films has changed so significantly. And I understand you had an intimacy coordinator on The Visitor. Can you talk to me what it's like when, you know, we know in the abstract about the prominence of intimacy coordinators on Hollywood films and on simulated sets, but when you're filming actual live blowjobs, penetration, etc., what does an intimacy coordinator do?
Yeah, I mean, I work for an official intimacy coordinator for the first time on a porn feature I did for Erica Lust in 2022 called The Affairs of Lydia. So it was a full-on kind of porn movie made for a porn company. Erica Lust is like an ethical feminist porn company. So they were one of the first people to kind of introduce intimacy coordinators. And in that instance, I just felt like it was a bit redundant because it's something that my producer, Jürgen Brüning, and I had done from the very beginning. Jürgen produced my early films and he started the first ever porn company in Berlin, Katzo Film, and I would make films with him. And the porn we made, we were the intimacy coordinators. You know, Jürgen and I, the producers, we were the ones that would make sure that that we cast actors who had chemistry with each other, that they knew exactly what they were doing, and why they were doing it. We did not ask them to do anything that they weren't comfortable with, and we had discussions with them about what they were willing to do on camera and what they weren't, and what turned them on, and then also to make a very conducive atmosphere conducive to sex when you're shooting, and to have all the kind of things that are just common sense, like make sure that there's plenty of wipes and towels and blankets and things to make them comfortable. And then there's the whole aspect of aftercare, where once you like shoot a porn scene with actors and they've done this very intimate thing, you can't just leave them and walk off the set like you would maybe in a normal movie and just kind of leave them to their own devices. You have to be there to have them kind of chill out and maybe talk about, you know, what happened and how they were feeling and how they feel afterwards. So so that's a lot of what an intimacy coordinator does that we had already kind of been doing. On The Visitor, I had an amazing woman, Lydia Reviseo, who was actually from the town that Pasolini was murdered in.
Oh, wow.
It's called Ostia on the outskirts of Rome. And she knew so much about Pasolini, and she makes porn herself for Erica Lust as a director. And so she brought a whole different dimension to it as well. I mean, she was there also as a kind of, you know, advisor, kind of spiritual advisor, if you will. She knew so much about Pasolini that she actually, I learned a lot about from her, and she was kind of like a kind of spiritual guide to the movie.
I'm sure it's not lost on you that mainstream cinema has sort of drifted from even featuring simulated sex scenes, and I definitely don't want to diminish and suggest that your work is only about the sex, and that's definitely not what I'm indicating. But, you know, did you ever think in the 30 plus years you've been making your films that we would become more conservative in this regard, and that there might be even more of a need for that provocation that your films are providing?
You know, I'm not surprised that there's been kind of a backlash against queer representation and queer gay rights and things like that, because the pendulum does swing back and forth. And also it's a bit of a hazard with the strategy of assimilation, like when gays like kind of started assimilating and sort of wanting to fit in and adopt like conservative, you know, participate in conservative institutions like marriage and the military and the church and all those things. And then, you know, you run the risk of the dominant ideology, the dominant order, the straight society saying, okay, well, it was conditional. You're members as long as you're well behaved, you know. And then when you start doing, you know, more outrageous things and that are outside the scope of normalcy, then you've kind of set yourself up for an expectation of people thinking that you were supposed to be well behaved, that you were kind of domesticated, you know. When you're not, you expect the backlash. But in terms of this sex in general, that's kind of surprising to me that cultural shift. It's as if like sex is some kind of foreign kind of behavior that, you know, to say that you don't need sex scenes in a movie because it implies that it's not an integral part of people's lives, that it's not a normal part of people's lives, or like a biological kind of imperative, like hunger or thirst, you know, like sexual desire. So there's a bit of anti kind of biology, I think, going on there. But I am a bit surprised by it. But on the other hand, that even makes me you know, more a bit more sanguine about my own work, and that I've really leaned into that so hard, because it's obviously something that if you don't express it and express it freely and in its full expression and explore fetishes and taboos and sexual taboos and all that stuff, then at any opportunity the kind of conservative dominant order is going to try to take it away from you, you know, and pretend it doesn't happen or that it isn't necessary. So, you know, I have my niche, and it's like a genre almost that I've created this kind of making work that addresses people's sexual extreme sexual fantasies, even if they're like politically incorrect, and to above all not to be, you know, shameful about them or guilty about them too. That's why porn is necessary. I mean, it allows you to express those kind of politically incorrect fantasies without shame or guilt. Give it to me, give it to me, crack, 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 crack.